Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's another week of the Kaufman Show. Welcome back. We are live with you on TSN Radio 690, or we are taped with you on thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. I am Dave. That is Jay.
Taped. Who says that? Taped?
Digitally recorded for your listening
taped?
Pleasure.
Come on.
Well, I showed, I'm a relic, Jay.
Taped.
I'm an ancient 32, and Okay. Tape still means something to me.
I guess.
I miss tapes.
You miss tapes?
I love tapes.
You love tapes?
Absolutely.
You love them getting all mixed up in the machine, and then you got to bring it out, and then you got to get
a pencil?
A pen or a pencil.
A pencil? You know, those things we used to have all the time?
And twirl it around. Yeah, pencil. What is that, you know?
I like taping things off the radio.
Never worked.
Which I guess is a little taboo, but I like taping things off the radio.
Never worked.
I like mixtapes.
Mixtapes.
Mixtapes. You knew someone gave a damn about you when they gave you a mixtape.
Yeah, and then they recorded off the radio, and then the damn guy would start talking through it halfway through, you know? And so you never got the good parts of the song, you know? Because he'd wait for the actual singer to start singing as he was doing the call sign for the radio and all that stuff. And I was just never happy with it.
I try not to talk over the music as best I can on this show.
Mm-hmm.
We run into it, though. It happens.
Well, we do it at the end.
Right.
We use the same song.
I'm sure that's right.
Yeah. Every
I'm
damn
sure
week.
Joel Plaskett doesn't mind. Last week, you were adamant that we are superstitious and we must close every show on that song.
Yeah. I still believe that firmly.
Oh, okay.
You know, I am a baseball guy. I have my beliefs and traditions and superstitions that have to be implemented. Otherwise, there's nothing but failure after that, Dave Kaufman.
Perhaps we should have worked on our superstitions at the end of the hockey season last year.
Yes.
That would have maybe allowed the tradition to continue. What's going on?
What's going on?
Did you see the press conferences on Thursday night?
Yes. Yeah, and I was cringing the whole time.
Well,
it was hard to watch.
After Donald Fears, I had hope. And then I've never seen Bettman so upset. So he just seemed jarred. He was like almost shaking. He was so angry.
And then Sidney Crosby walks into the room. In the middle of Bettman talking. Did you hear about that?
No, I did not.
You know what it reminds me of? I don't know if you remember the movie Fugitive. And at the end, where Harrison Ford's character, Richard Kimball.
Dr. Richard Kimball,
Dr.
Yes.
Richard Kimball finally figures out that it's his own buddy that's been screwing him over to...
It's like a hospital gala dinner
for the pharmaceuticals.
Right? Yeah.
And he's in the middle of the gala, and he's talking. Now he finds out it's this guy that paid somebody else to kill his wife.
Right.
And he's standing there while the guy's giving the speech... You know, that's what it reminded me of. Kind of like Bettman looking at Crosby out of the corner of his eye, a single trickle of sweat going down the side of his face.
Was this like Sidney's final...
Except Sidney didn't yell out, "You killed my wife!" He didn't yell that out for some reason.
He was flipping him the proverbial penguin before jumping a flight to Europe, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into all this and more with special assistant to Donald Fear / NHLPA executive Matthew Schneider. In a few minutes' time on the program. We'll also be joined by Jonah Carey from Grantland.com and Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace. We've got ourselves a good one. I know, we got a good show for you guys tonight. We're going to, unless anything massive and major breaks, I think we're going to have a lot more fun tonight than we've had in the last few weeks. We're going to...
Knowing our show, something will break.
That's...
We're playing!
That's true.
The NHL, we're playing.
That would be... Don't tease everybody like that.
No, I know. I know. Like imagine somebody just tuned in as I was saying that.
It's like a faux war of the worlds, right?
Yeah. Now they're all mad at me.
Well, I don't, you just don't. You don't want to dangle hope in front of people like that.
You killed my wife. I don't care. That's my Tommy Lee Jones impression.
That's a pretty good Tommy Lee Jones.
I didn't kill my wife. I don't care.
I was thinking about Tommy Lee Jones, actually, Jay. I didn't know that he would come up tonight, but I was. Yeah. Well, I saw Lincoln over the weekend.
Yeah.
What a movie.
Yes.
What an incredible movie.
I didn't see it.
Everybody talks about how great Daniel Day-Lewis is, and yes, Daniel Day-Lewis is great. He's wonderful in everything. Tommy Lee Jones in this movie, Jay. Oh, my goodness.
My brother told me that. My brother told me also that Daniel Day-Lewis's performance is so good that if you watch it, you will learn about life. That's what he said. I don't even know what that means.
Well,
it means it's good, that's for sure.
I'm a big... Lincoln guy. I studied American history in school, and he's got that goosebump factor. Wonderful leader, speaker. We'll actually play you a bit of an Abraham Lincoln speech I imagine re-recorded.
A real one?
Well, the speech was.
Was it taped?
It was taped.
No, it wasn't even taped then. It was kind of carved into a wax disc. That's what they now they did it back then.
I think that Lincoln predates that.
Even that, huh?
Yeah, there's no known recording of Abraham Lincoln's
voice. No, there
voice.
Isn't. Although they say he had a very high-pitched voice.
They do, and a lot of people took the people that made this movie to task for it. But that's something I've always heard, that Lincoln's voice mm-hmm. is not the one that you hear in the Hall of Presidents at
right.
Disney World.
Yeah.
It's not fourscore. And he doesn't sound like you.
Yeah.
Jay.
Yeah. Or Bane. He doesn't sound like Bane either. 407 years ago.
It was so good. And Tommy Lee Jones, I haven't seen Tommy Lee Jones act like that ever. He was
no.
just, he was phenomenal.
Just like.
And yes, he's in so many crappy movies, and maybe that's why. And
yeah,
that's where I'm going.
Well, I mean, he's a hell of an actor. I mean,
I haven't seen him stretch that much in a role since he was in JFK.
Okay.
So maybe he's just got a thing for presidential movies.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I look forward to seeing him in...
Did he tell Abraham Lincoln that he doesn't care? I don't care!
I don't remember.
He didn't do that?
No, he played a northerner, actually.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so already the stretch.
Oh, okay.
Wow, we're really...
I don't care. What are we talking about?
Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, okay.
I'd say there's no hockey, but why don't we just take a little break?
Yes.
And then we come back and we will talk hockey with Matt Schneider.
Yeah, 93 alumni, baby.
You know we go there. This is the Kaufman Show, and it's still Monday. You're listening to The Kaufman Show, and we'll be right back.
The day you remember the package where he used to spend his years, and now you found him. Or was it him that found you? It feels like you already knew. Life is sweet when it's back, so why'd you say welcome home? Look, Robbie Tyler, so much that you missed our mold, but I need you as much as yesterday.
Okay, welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Let's bring in NHLPA executive and special assistant to Donald Fehr. You also remember him from his time playing in this fair city, Matthew Schneider. Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for appearing on the program. We appreciate it. Now, obviously, the big news today is that games have been canceled until the 30th of December. What's the PA's current level of frustration?
Well, you know, I think it's fair to say it's pretty high. You know, the guys are, I'd say it's a combination of anger and frustration. And being my third lockout through the course of my career, this time obviously not as a player, seems certainly like the most unnecessary one. Not that any of them were necessary.
Do you mean that you don't think that it's that far apart right now, that it's negotiable?
Well, absolutely. I mean, listen, everything's been negotiable from day one. And we're sitting here today almost on top of each other on a lot of issues, mainly the money issue. And it appears to be not necessarily about the money anymore.
Bill Daly said today that contract length is the hill that they'll die on. Is there a hill that the NHLPA will die on?
Well, the fact of the matter is the contracting rights are much more important to the players than they are to the ownership group. And when the salary cap system came into effect back in 2005, essentially what it did is create these long contracts, because you never saw those contracts before. And now what they want to do is take away the contracting rights that we gained in the last negotiation. It was about the only thing that we gained in the last negotiation. They want to take that away, and they're using that as a hammer right now.
What's to prevent this all from happening again when the next CBA expires after this gets agreed to?
Well, right now I would say it's the guy standing up, because you know, I try to explain it to my young son by saying it's like standing up to the playground bully. If you let him bully you around once or twice, he's going to keep coming back and doing it. But you got to take a stand at some point. And I think the players realize that. And it's a desperate situation now for the guys. They understand that if they cave now, that same thing's going to happen next time.
Now, where does decertification stand right now as a priority for the PA?
Well, it's certainly something that has been discussed, obviously, from you know, our standpoint, and we'd be negligent if we didn't discuss it. But you know, Don's always talked about it as a nuclear option, and you know, other than that, we really don't like to discuss it as a negotiating tactic or anything like that, because that's not how it should be used.
Well, it seemed to have worked for the NBA in their dispute last year, no?
Well, you know, that's they came to an agreement shortly after. I don't really know the circumstances in detail that happened in the NBA or the NFL. But you know, like I said, it's certainly something that has been discussed. It's no secret, but again, it's something that we talk about internally.
Let's end on a happier note, Matthew. We're coming up on the 20th anniversary of the 92-93 Stanley Cup win for the Montreal Canadiens. Make you feel old?
Yeah, well, I've been feeling old for a few years now, but you know, that's I mean, who would have imagined that that was the last time a Canadian team would have won in all these years? But it was certainly one of the most special times in my life, and I remember Montreal with great fondness. Going back to Montreal at the end of my career was one of my highlights as well. Playing in the new building, a lot of your fans probably don't remember the old one, but it was. I love Montreal. I have a lot of great memories.
Do you have possibly an anecdote or a story from the '93 playoffs you could share with the audience before we let you go?
Well, I mean, you know, we were down to Quebec in the first series 2-0. I remember, and I had actually gotten hurt in Quebec early on, and I was out. I missed the rest of that series and the second round as well. But I remember coming back to Montreal, and the guys were talking about planning the summer vacations that night, and they're like, this looks like it's going to be a quick one for us. And then you win one game, and next thing the momentum turns, and it turned into a fairy tale when winning so many games in a row. I think that was actually the night we won our first overtime game, and then it stretched into 10. But You know, it was a pretty incredible ride, and obviously we weren't expected to win that year, and it made it even more special.
I was a 12-year-old kid, and there was no better time to be a Habs fan.
I bet.
Matt,
I bet.
I hope for the sake of 12-year-old kids everywhere, the players get back on the ice soon, and I thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good one. Our thanks to Matthew Schneider, the NHLPA. This is the Kaufman Show. Let me hear you say yeah, 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 if you with me, yeah, say yeah. Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jonah Carey around the corner. Our Lady Peace's Jeremy Taggart after that. And that was Matthew Schneider in the last segment of the show. Nice to get his quick little chat, but nice to get his thoughts on where we're at right now. And again, it's so weird to me, Jay, that you hear from the PA that they're not that far apart. And then you hear from the National Hockey League, what are you talking about? We're miles apart.
Yeah.
And there's so much posturing. And
good cop, bad cop.
Yes.
That's what that is. I mean, it's very clear.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. But at one point, the posturing has to end. Even if it's just to cancel the season. If that's what allows them to start speaking with a frankness and a seriousness that I think a lot of people feel is lacking. Then bring it on. Cancel the damn season.
Yeah, well, maybe the problem is that they're talking with a frankness. I mean, maybe that is the problem. Maybe if they're, you know, kind of trying to, I mean, kind of like using a mediator, I mean, obviously that's not going to work. But if they're a little bit more diplomatic when they're having their arguments, perhaps... You know, I've always
well, we're
said,
not in the room, though. We don't know.
No, we don't know, obviously. But, I mean, obviously they're being frank to each other because they're saying, literally, listen, I don't care about your offer. I'm not using it. You know, I don't like it. I don't want it. And then they're saying, well, oh, they don't want it. And it's just, if a little diplomacy can go a long way.
Oh, it can definitely go a very long way.
I've always said, you can charm the hell out of somebody. And politeness. Politeness also goes a long way.
You can not like someone and you can respect them. And
right.
I feel like this has lost both are lost right now.
Right.
They don't like or respect each other.
And
that's
something I wanted to ask,
but I didn't ask. And I didn't, I guess in retrospect, I probably should have, and next time I will.
Yeah.
But you'd figure that that factors in greatly. Do you remember when, I guess it was a lockout in the early 90s when Chris Chelios wore the Bettman sucks sticker on his helmet?
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it set everything back.
Yeah. Of course it set everything back, and that's what I mean about the frankness. That's a little too frank, and I can't believe that I'm arguing against being frank and honest and coming from the heart. But, you know...
Well, even you understand that
sometimes
diplomacy,
you got to be full of crap in order for things to advance, you know?
Diplomacy has its moments.
Diplomacy has its moments, and so does politeness. I always believe in politeness. I always believe about being brutally honest, but at the same time, you can be polite about it as well.
And that's why you get that chair.
Thank you very much.
514-790-1690-1690 is the local number. 1-866-896-2546 if you're out of town. Want to know what you thought of Matthew Schneider's comments tonight on The Kaufman Show. Nothing really surprising there.
No.
Frankly, my favorite
part of it
was...
Well, you knew what you were going to get.
Yeah, my favorite part of it was hearing about 93.
Yeah, exactly. That was the best part. And you know what? It actually reminded me, too, because he loves Montreal, and he was so thrilled to come back. And I remember when he did come back, he was so thrilled. You could see it in his face. It was an ear-to-ear smile. And Matthew Schneider always had an ear-to-ear smile. You would catch it on the ice at some points. You know, it's the kind of guy he was. And he's kind of a joy to be around. You can see it. And he was so thrilled when he came back and he got that great ovation. It was a great thing.
I believe, Mr. Farrar, that Matthew Schneider is our first guest who has been on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
I'm thinking.
I can't think off the top of my head. Nobody else makes that list.
I'm thinking.
Do you remember his cover?
No, I don't.
It was during the 93 Stanley Cup Finals.
Okay.
And the headline was Très Bien Canadien. And I want to say he was upending either Luc Robitaille or Thomas Sandstrom.
American Sports Illustrated?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So the real Sports
the
Illustrated.
The real Sports Illustrated. That's right.
Okay.
I was thinking, and I mean, Patrick was on the cover of SI Canada a week later.
But he hasn't been on our show.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, the real Sports Illustrated. If
right.
you can if you can think of somebody else, I can't right now.
Ellis Valentine? No.
He was, oh, you know what? Maybe. I think.
Was he ever on the cover?
Weren't Ellis, Cromartie, and Dawson on the cover of a Sports Illustrated?
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
But
wow.
I'm
all
not
right.
sure about that.
Well, in that case, I guess that makes Matthew Schneider the first guest this week on
yeah.
the show who's been on the cover of SI.
Kaufman, you liar.
We're getting a little big for
I'm
our
catching
britches
you in your
here,
lies.
Right? Jeez, let's go to the phones. Someone to help ground us and put our egos in check. We've got George in God's country. Hello, George.
Hey, Dave, and hello, Jay. How's it going?
We're great. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Can't complain. Life could be a lot better and it could be a lot worse. That's the way I see things these days.
Well, the glass sounds half something. I'm not sure what.
I
okay.
was compelled to call your show after I saw Jay Farrar in my dreams the other night.
I'm sorry?
He's haunting me.
My goodness, I'm not sure. Wow, okay. What? I'm not
going to get into the details.
No. You're going to get into the details because...
Because you called into our radio show.
You called
show
into the radio
it.
Show, and if I appear in someone's dreams, I sure as hell want to know what I was doing in your
actually,
dream.
Actually, you know, it went sort of like that. Remember the stint where they had Steve, what's his name there, the comedian, I forget now his name, and Dan Aykroyd. Steve Martin. That's
Steve Martin.
Steve Martin, yeah. And they were going, we're too wild in the crazy guys. So what happened was I was seeing this dream.
Are you saying I was...
Jay
I was
and I
one
were
of those guys.
Cruising together.
I was one of the Czech brothers. Is that what you're saying?
I am so.
Well, we were the Greek brothers, Jay.
Oh.
I am so thankful I'm not in your dreams, George.
By the way, I'm...
okay. Well, I was cruising. What were we doing? We were cruising together,
yeah,
George.
Yeah, we were cruising together, Jay.
Okay, we weren't cruising each other.
I was riding your coattails, in other words.
Okay, great. Okay, that's good. That's good. I
better than what you thought, huh, Jay?
Hey, listen. Listen, even then, I'll take whatever I can get.
What can we do for you, Georgie?
Two things. Number one, as you were speaking about that picture of Cromartie, Dawson, and Valentine on that Sports Illustrated.
Was that on a cover?
Yeah, that was on the cover.
Okay.
I happen when they were in town, I got that, because I have a picture of that. I got all three of them to sign that. And
cool.
And it stands right in my office right now as we speak.
There you
great,
go.
Great souvenir item. What I wanted to talk about was I wanted to vent a little bit as far as the NHL lockout and posturing, as you call it. I was in Greece for a month, as you all know, and I thought that by the time I'd come back that we'd have some hockey, but obviously we still don't. The way that I look at things is very simple. I'm holding a souvenir ticket from my 1996 last inaugural game at the Molson Center, which is now the Bell Center.
Yep.
And I see the ticket price there for the New York Rangers versus the Montreal Canadiens at $65.
Where's the seat?
The seat was in the section, hold on a sec, section 108.
No way. No way, a seat in the Reds. 108's
yes,
behind the net, am I right?
Exactly.
Okay, so 108's behind the net in the Reds for $65.
$65.
Wow.
Now we're looking at it about 16 years later, okay? We're looking at a game of the same magnitude, Rangers versus Montreal.
110.
Which is at least, in the Reds section, at least over $200 for a seat.
No, not true. Calling it's you on true. That one. Calling you on that one, not true.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm going to tell you right now.
It's
okay?
Not $200 a seat. It might be $125. It might be $150. But the
no
$200
way,
a seat
Jay,
are the.
You. I mean, Dave, you're way wrong on this.
All
right. In the Reds right now, you're looking at least $175. And
it's
if it's a
down,
premium
eh?
Game, it's over $200. And I'm not talking scalpers. I'm talking about face value. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's my point, all right?
Yep.
We're being charged at least $120 more for that ticket.
Sure.
I don't think our salaries have increased to the point where we can actually put the same value on the ticket from 16 years ago as we do today.
Doesn't work that way, George. I mean, the ticket was $10 in 1979, right?
But, Dave, this is the storyline, okay?
Like, and I'll tell you what, George, in 1996... we thought it was highway robbery to pay $65 for that ticket.
Well, no, I don't think it was highway robbery. I mean, you know, but it was a little bit
it's
more
all relative,
affordable.
Man. It's
it was
all
more
relative.
Affordable, Dave. Let's just put it that way. For the average Joe, it was more affordable.
Yes.
Now what's happening today is unless somebody passes you two tickets, you know, complimentary tickets because he happens to have season tickets and his company is can throw away tickets at will, okay? Then you'll be, if you're lucky, you'll be able to get a seat in the Reds, or else you're in the moon dock section up in the Molson Center up at the top, you know. And
as somebody who has season tickets up on the surface of the moon in section 301,
yes,
I'm convinced that that's where the real fans sit.
Well, maybe that's where the real fans
and
sit.
And you know what? And another great example of that, George, is this Charbonneau Commission right now,
mm-hmm.
where they're talking about all the city guys getting payoffs of hockey tickets. And there were quotes coming out of guys who were so bored at the games that they stated, oh, yeah, I took these tickets because it was the thing to do, but I was always gone after the second period.
My question to you, Dave, is simple, okay?
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not blaming the players and I'm not blaming the owners. I'm blaming both sides.
Okay.
Okay.
You're going to leave some room in there
what?
To blame the fans,
let's
too,
welcome
or no?
Everybody, let's welcome everybody to the real world. Okay, because I just came back from Greece for a month, and if you want to see what it's like to have a hard time right now, you should go ask the average Joe there who's had his salaries decreased by 50% and his taxes raised by 25%. Okay, now he's got to face the real world. We're sitting here in a world, okay, where we have billionaire owners, okay, and we have millionaire hockey players. The average guy does not make $1 million in a lifetime, all right? And these guys are making it on an average almost $2.5 million a year.
Yeah, but George, you don't have to go to Greece to see poverty. It exists in Montreal.
I just saw it, you know, firsthand, like rioting, where it gets to the point where rioting, you know. And what I'm saying is that I don't feel sorry when I see people here struggling to make ends meet, having to make their hydro bills and okay. And there we're talking about rich boys now. We're talking about rich boys and rich owners, and they're sitting there and they're playing a little ego game. And you know what? It's the stupid people who sit there and whose lives have been affected by these hockey players who say, oh my God, when will this strike over? When will the lockout be over? and they keep on thinking about. I'm starting to get to the point where I'm saying to myself, and I tweeted that the other day, cancel the season already.
Yes.
If you've got the balls, cancel the season already, and let's get on with our lives, because this is ridiculous.
George,
every single day.
George.
Yes, sir.
First of all, thank you for the call. Second of all, you don't need them to cancel the season for you to get on with your life. I think that's the big lesson for everybody right now, is that you do not need to wait for that bloody press conference to get on with your life.
I already have.
And it's been great.
I am appearing in George's dreams. He's starting to talk like me. Did you hear him?
A little bit.
That a boy, George.
A little bit.
Well, that a boy, George.
George,
you
some,
call in any time you want.
With some bite.
Some chutzpah. That a boy.
Jay and I say it all the time. We haven't missed a beat this year. We joke on the show that we have nothing to talk about. Please, it's so much fun to talk about things other than hockey. This time last year, talking about the Habs sucked.
Yeah, it
they were terrible. That was a fun call.
Oh. George brings it, man. I'm a boy.
This is the Kaufman Show. On the home of the Habs, TSN 690. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you. Let's bring back in Grantland.com's Jonah Carey, who is currently talking on a little Iceman.
That's right. It's a Val Kilmer discussion on Twitter. Dude, I'm going to say this. I think I've maybe said it publicly before, but listen, I'm very comfortable with who I am and the choices that I've made and all that. But if at any point in my life I were to have ever switched teams, it would have been for early career Val Kilmer. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to put that out there.
Are you talking like Doors era?
Oh, even before that, real
Top
genius,
Gun,
Top Secret,
Top
all
Gun,
that stuff. Top Gun,
yeah.
And especially The Salt and Sea, which is the single most underrated movie that has ever existed, and nobody has seen it except me, apparently.
I have not. Jay,
it's amazing.
No,
Vincent D'Onofrio
is
a total lunatic in that movie. It's amazing. It's sort of like Breaking Bad meets a heist movie, meets Crazy People, meets an indie film. It's so good.
With Val Kilmer.
With Val Kilmer and Vincent D'Onofrio, and early D'Onofrio is also amazing. It's a great movie.
Well, with no hockey, we're always looking for more movies to watch on cold winter nights. But
you can do that.
In the meantime, the mind kind of turns to baseball, at least for me, as it always does. And you were the first person I thought of when this massive trade broke the other night on, I guess it was Sunday evening. Tell me, who do you think wins the deal?
Well, the Rays win the deal in the sense that they have more years of team control for some good players. I mean, James Shields is a very good pitcher, and I don't think we should underrate that. But what the Rays got with Will Myers, he's an excellent prospect. Listen, prospects don't always work out, but he's an elite prospect, and prospects that good usually do. They get him for 6 years. They get the other three guys for 6 years. There's a chance that one or more of them work out. And, you know, what the Rays have ultimately done is converted two of their pitchers into a whole bunch of depth and some hitting ability for the near term and the long term. And furthermore, it frees up a lot of money, so they can go out and get whatever else they want. They have $12 million extra to spend. That puts them in good shape. And what I really like about it is, and I'm writing about this deal for tomorrow for Granlin, Randy Gisserli wrote a piece today. My thing is, I never look at things in black and white, and I think too many people do in all terms. And, you know, you say who wins the deal, even that's not exactly asking the right question. I mean, yes, that's ultimately we have to judge it by winners and losers, but it's more about what is the thought process going into the deal. And the Royals said, oh, well, we got to get a number one starter. Who's sort of like a number one starter? Okay, James Shields. All right, let's just give them whatever it takes to get James Shields. Whereas the Rays are saying, how can we make our team better, and what are the many possibilities that we could do it? And that's what I really like about the Rays' approach compared to the Kansas City's approach. It's just, it's more flexible, and it takes advantage of situations, whereas the Royals kind of painted themselves into a corner, and as a result, had to give up an all-world prospect to do it.
Scott Ferguson writes for TSN MLB. He says that not only Blue Jays are happy about this, but they're ecstatic about it, and they're not admitting it. Is it because they've taken away some of their pitching depth right away? Or because, I mean, obviously, if Tampa, their only prospects are only going to be around in a couple of years or so, although Dave told me that one of them is major league ready.
I think the guy that the key to this deal, he's major league ready, is he not, Jonah?
Yeah, Will Myers is major league ready. They might choose to keep him in the minors just to start the season to game his service time and
right. All
that nonsense, but he'll be out for the majority of the year. I mean, he's going to be a good player, and they need an offense big time, so he helps their lineup, absolutely.
The Blue Jays, are the Blue Jays happy about this?
I don't know why they would be. I mean, the Rays right now are a slightly worse team than they were before they made the trade. But again, now the Rays have $12 million that they could do whatever they want with. They can
right.
go after another hitter. They can go after an arm, whatever. So I think that if you look at it, at the worst, the Rays are going to probably tread water. You know, you could say that maybe they tread water for 2013, but gosh, they made themselves much better for 2015, 16, 17, 18. They are known, notorious for signing they're good young players, a long-term contract. Maybe they keep Myers for even more than 6 years. It just sets themselves up very well up for the long term. So I don't agree. I don't think the Jays are ecstatic about this at all.
Let's move over to the National League, where it's unbelievable how much of my Twitter feed is dominated by baseball-related news through Magic Johnson, which I think is kind of cool.
Trying to think. I guess I probably should tell tales out of school. Let's say this. I heard through the grapevine that Magic was involved in what was going on with Greinke. Was Zach Greinke signing a $147 million contract? That he was very much being consulted on the deal and all that on Friday when the beginnings of it were happening, and Greinke came to visit and he met with the brass, and Magic was one of them. And it's funny. I think there's sort of two schools of thought on Magic. One was maybe the masses, when the Dodgers took over, okay, well, it's this financial guy I've never heard of, and this guy, oh, Magic Johnson, I know him, that's fine. And number two is, Magic Johnson, what a clown, he has nothing to do with anything. And the answer lies somewhere in between. Magic Johnson actually is involved to some extent in what's going on, but he's not the general manager of the team, and he has no real say into player acquisitions. It's more like, he has a relatively decent, well, not relatively decent, but, a chunk of his team, let's say, and it's his money, too, and he gets to have input into it. So that's what's going on. And yeah, I think it's interesting that he's involved in it. And I think even more interesting is what the Dodgers are doing. I mean, their payroll is going to be, $240 million next year, something like that, the biggest in the history of baseball. And they might not be done. They really continue to make moves, and there's no reason not to. The TV money that they're getting is incredible. They're just printing profits over there. So go nuts. What the hell? Shoot the moon.
What do you think is a better 1-2 right now, Washington's or L.A.'s?
I probably would take the Dodgers just because of Strasburg's health. I mean, we're still waiting, not health exactly, but sort of durability. We're waiting for him to have the 220-inning season, whereas Kershaw's just a stud. Kershaw's the best pitcher in the National League. And, you throw in Greinke, who's very good. I mean, he's only had 1 year where you could really say that he was Cy Young caliber, but he's certainly been very good many other times, so I liked him by a little bit.
Finally, Jonah, how's the Tim Raines campaigning going?
Well, he's not going to get to the Hall of Fame this year anytime soon, so if that's what you're asking, not so well. But, we're doing what we can. Reigns30.com is the website started by Tom Tango and some other Canadian expats, and I'm, nominally involved as well. And, we just want to kind of raise awareness with Reigns. I mean, he had a great career. The famous stat that we always like to quote is that Tony Gwynn was the first ballot Hall of Famer, got 97% of the vote, and Tim Raines reached base more times in his career than Tony Gwynn did. And, there's a lot of other things you could point to, and you could still say that Gwynn might have been a better player than Raines. But the bottom line is that Raines has been ignored the sixth year on the ballot. He's not even close, whereas Gwynn just skated in no problem. And there's a disconnect there. And I think it has to do with Gwynn playing for one team his whole career and walks not being valued as much as hits are. And maybe there are some stupid people who actually care about what the 21-year-old kid did 30 years ago as far as recreational drugs. I don't know. But, it's silly at this point. Tim Raines is clearly a deserving Hall of Famer by any objective standard of the Hall of Fame. And hopefully, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, maybe Bonds and Clemens, all those guys have to clear out first. But I do think that eventually they'll see the light and he'll get into the Hall of Fame. And when he does, I'll be in Cooperstown to see him inducted.
I think we all will. But why can't that school of thought be that he should go in before as compared to after the steroid era guys?
Well, it's a funny thing about the steroid era guys. You know, some people have asked me, oh, well, Bonds and Clemens and those guys, there's a lot of backlash, so does that help Reigns? Well, not really, because you still have all these holdover candidates, and, you know, you got to figure out what to do with all of them, and Jack Morris, God, who shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but he's getting support and whatever. So there's just more bodies out there, and even if there are people that are against Bonds and Clemens, there are still people that, rightfully so, by the way, are going to vote for him, just like there are people that are going to vote for whatever, Mike Piazza, never been caught doing anything, but there have been accusations, unfounded though they may be, and Jeff Bagwell, and then you're going to have a next batch. It's going to be guys like Maddox and Glavin and Pedro coming and Randy Johnson and all these guys. So it's just going to get more and more crowded. And I think the bottom line here is it's not just – people just find an excuse not to vote for everybody. They won't vote for PED people. They won't vote for you if you're a high on base guy and you had walks more than hits. They won't vote for you if you didn't have 500 home runs. If they do, then you have to have 600 home runs, or you have to play for one team. It's just these BS excuses, and it's just, it's like they're, you know, just the cognitive dissonance bouncers at the cheesiest nightclub you've ever seen. That's what the Baseball Writers Association of America is, basically. They're determined to keep these guys out. It's ridiculous.
Jonah, that's why you're the best. Thank you so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it. Read him on Grantland.com. Follow him on Twitter at Jonah Carey.
Thanks, Jen. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks. Speak to you soon. Our thanks to Jonah Carey. This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back with Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar, one of our favorite guests, is around the corner, and we figured we'd bring him in on one of his favorite songs. He is the drummer from Our Lady Peace. You can catch him on Off the Record of late. You can catch him on the Dan and Jay podcast on this fine, fine network of ours. And we got him now. It's Jeremy Taggart. Hey, Jer.
Hey, how are you, fellas?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Great. Always a pleasure to do your show here.
Oh, thank you, sir. We appreciate that. And there are
one
many
of my
things...
favorites, if I may dare say.
Wow.
So. That's
wow.
Praise from Caesar. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We get to the things that we know you like best, like belly putters, I thought it was time that we bring you on for a victory lap about this mega quarry. And I want you to explain to our audience just what you did, because I think it's important that people understand that people have power.
Well, I mean, basically... This mega quarry that was proposed to be built in Melancton, Ontario, on 6 headwater systems and prime farmland. Basically, it was kind of bought under the idea that it was supposed to be maintained as potato farming, and then all of a sudden they were backtracking and deciding they wanted to drill for limestone and blow it up and all the terrible things. And anyway, it was a process that seemed impossible because it's a $23 billion hedge fund from Boston called Baupost that was doing this and doing this real estate venture. And once people found out and caught wind what was happening, it just kind of grew like wildfire, not just locally, but throughout Ontario. And we had several protests. We had food stock last year put together by Michael Statlander and 100 chefs. and the Canadian Chef Congress, and also we had Soup Stock this year, and that was even bigger. It was 200 chefs and various little things like marches and concerts, and just I think the culmination of you know, hundreds of thousands of people saying they didn't want this to happen, and eventually Valpost actually backed out and took their application out, and it's not going to happen. So it's incredible, and it's all due to the actual people getting together and doing proper protesting under the right reasons, and being clear and peaceful, and just being very understanding to the fact that we need to protect our future and take care of ourselves and the localization of food and all of those things and water. And it's just a big, huge win for environment, our environment in Canada and everything. It's great.
I think it was very difficult for people to realize just the size and scope of this potential project. And one of the ways that you guys helped to make people realize, myself included, was by showing it on a map of Toronto.
Yeah. It was most of downtown, basically 2,500 square acres and 250 feet deep. That's almost twice the size of Niagara Falls, that drop. And then all that water that's coming into that area being harnessed and taken across the quarry floor and put back into the aquifer, that's 600 million liters of water a day in perpetuity. You know, 1.8 million people drinking water every day. So just ghastly stuff you don't want to even think about on the science end of things. And just, I'm glad it's not even an issue anymore. But I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen, with not just water, but our resources that could be taken away, and just, realize that just because a big company is coming in to do it doesn't mean it's going to happen. That's all, you know.
Well, it's funny because in the sports world right now, there's so much anger towards the NHL, which is, I mean, a behemoth of a company, but nothing compared to a $23 billion company like you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And
well,
it all, I mean, I know it's an absolutely trivial comparison, but it makes you wonder what people could do if they mobilized and organized.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, you know, who do you side with? You know, I mean, to be honest, it's like, both sides, you can't really blame either if you look at what they're trying to do. And then, but the only people that are really getting hurt is again the population. So, how do you protest against, you know, them trying to do business? You know, it's just bizarre. And I just concern myself with, you know, the idea that these guys in New York, you know, when they get together, they're treating the NHL like it's a conglomerate like baseball or the NFL, and it's not. You know, it's smaller. And when you sit and think you can just bandy and wait like a Major League Baseball, it's just, I don't think they realize the consequences in terms of, you know, how bad it is for the economy. And this is just a bad time for any sport to be doing this. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, but when you're dealing with fighting over something that has the revenue that isn't seem to be, you know, for example, you know, the LA Dodgers just signed a deal with Fox for $240 million a year for their own personal, you know, TV contract. And the NHL, you know, their biggest deal is with NBC at $200 million a year for the whole league, you know. And it's just that when you, these guys think they're the big dogs fighting with the big dogs, but it's not. This is an issue that is smaller. It seems to have so many more ramifications, and I just don't know if any sport could survive a strike right now the way the economy is. It's just terrible, you know.
You're friends with a lot of players, and I'd imagine that this conversation would come up from time to time, would it not?
To be honest, I just don't even bring it up with any player because it's just so frustrating. Because you can't really blame either guy. Like I said, it's like you could say, you know, the players are greedy, but, you know, they're fighting for their future. They're trying to give themselves the same respect that players in other leagues have. You know, they're trying to, but they can't because they don't have it's not as big, the union in the NFL when they're trying to get something done. they're dealing with a mass amount of cash, and the power just seems to be a little more level, you know, when it's the NHL players versus these owners. And it's just a little bogglesome to try and understand with, you know, some of the things. It seems to be there's less transparency with how things go in the NHL because it's a little bit under the radar in that sense, you know, the smaller spectrum of it.
Do you see any comparison, Jeremy, in the way that what the players have to deal with vis-a-vis the owners, and maybe what a band would have to deal with versus like a Ticketmaster or a Live Nation or something like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're dealing with a monopoly, or, you know, if you're trying to go up against a Live Nation or a Ticketmaster for ticket prices or venue issues, it's just, like you said before, I mean, getting together to do something, but it's like, it would be amazing. I think it would happen if you got 150,000 people in the city to get together, but for one specific thing, like the quarry. There's nothing more obvious than what we did. We just didn't want this to happen. The NHL lockout's like, yeah, we want hockey, but, you know, at what cost and at what percentage is the thing. But even when you think of cities and strikes, it's tough. You know, you have to be so specific and simple for things to work, right?
A couple of minutes left with Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace on the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar.
Jeremy, I'm going back to what you said a little bit earlier about the NHL not as being as big and powerful as the other leagues. This is true, but I find that the NHL has more of an impact of smaller markets, small Canadian cities like Winnipeg, Montreal, where the only thing they have is hockey.
We're small now?
We're small.
Oh,
we are small as compared,
well,
because,
you know,
we don't have anything else.
Yeah, I think you're. I don't want it to misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm saying it is smaller by the virtue of the dollars and the gates that are coming in at the end of the
year. Oh,
yeah,
no, I agree with
that. In terms of the actual city, I mean, it's actually bigger because you're dealing with a Canadian issue, and it's our country, it's a different thing. Like, for Canada, nothing could be bigger. Nothing could make more money faster than hockey.
And that's it.
So
that's what
they're trying to get a deal that's worth, you know, or whatever stance that they're trying to do is based on, you know, a Major League Baseball or an NFL, when it's like, it just seems like they act like an elephant and nothing is going to happen, you know, when it's just not fair. You know, I just feel like it's a lose-lose when they're trying to negotiate these contracts compared to these other leagues on the business side of things, when a lot of the problems are they're trying to develop like these leagues and in cities that it's just not happening and it's just not going to work. And it seems like these strikes are just trying to fix the constant problem of expansion, you know, that's not ever going to work.
Yeah, well, what I was getting to when I was talking about the smaller markets is the impact that it has on the population surrounding the actual NHL, the money that it brings in, the bartenders, the waitresses, the truck drivers, the people all around it that can only depend on the NHL. And
well, but you know what, Jay, I disagree with that, because I think that's a bad business model to start with. To be fully reliant on something else like that as your business model, you're in trouble.
Well, I'm not saying that, but it does affect them, because there's nothing else to go back on. You go to LA, I mean,
yeah, there's a million things. Exactly.
Yeah, in Nashville, they're not caring that the Predators are not playing right now, because they're watching
Titans.
Yeah,
it's terrible. There's people that work at the Air Canada Center that manage suites, or, you know, that take home extra thousands a month.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's it.
That,
the people carrying
reason,
trays, and yeah.
But not just the actual business, the trickle down effect of business from a hockey game is massive.
Right.
It is huge. And for example, yeah, Winnipeg, if it wasn't for hockey, I don't think there'd be that Geary looking building that's going up there. The new museum, the history museum, that city has got an explosion of vitality to it on the economic sense. And I think it has a lot to do with the Jets getting in that city, you know. So I believe absolutely it's huge for a city, especially a Canadian city. It's just when they're comparing it to the dollars and cents of these other leagues and trying to think that they can wait for 2 years and you know, people can afford to sit around and not do this. It's just, it's way more impactful.
Pompous.
Yeah, but let's not kid ourselves. I don't think that the guys in New York in these meetings give a damn about the guy that owns the parking lot across the street from the Bell Center.
No.
Yeah, and the sad thing is if we don't go to games and we say no, then we hurt ourselves even more.
Right.
You know, it's a terrible thing. And hopefully they figure out that this is a stupid idea to do in an economic time like this where we need to do this. And people are borrowing to get through winters because they, you know, don't have hockey to, you know, that extra 20% that are going, people that go to St. Louis bar around the corner from the rink that when the game's on, that's not happening. You know, it's sad.
Couple of minutes left, Jer. Got to get your thoughts on the PGA's banned belly putters starting in 2016. First of all, I don't think I've ever played in a foursome with somebody who has a belly putter, and I'm imagining you play a lot of golf, so I'm figuring you have, but I'm wondering how hard that person gets laughed at when they pull it out of the bag.
Yeah, there's always the ribbing, for sure, but until they start rolling putts in, that stops, and generally that's the case. And I do believe I think it's a good ban. I think anchoring the putter, anchoring your stroke is different than all the other clubs in your bag. It's a free stroke. I think anchoring it takes away a percentage of movement from the stroke. You know, it's almost like when you insert it to your belly button and swing it, it's almost half of the actual movement that's possible. So, yeah, I think there's an advantage to using it, and the fact that players that do use it are still using it and do feel that it makes them play better because they use it. So I feel that it's an advantage, and I just don't think. And I see it growing, and when you see a kid like Gwen Yang Tang or whatever, the Chinese kid that was 14 years old that won and got the invitation to the Masters, he's never used a short putter, you know. And when you get stuff like that happening, it's just kind of odd when it's just all of a sudden there's one club in your bag that you attach to your body and swing it. It's just not normal, and it makes sense that they banned it to me.
It kind of reminds me of, you know, that guy who you're playing pool with who always uses the bridge no matter what, even when he can reach the ball, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that. Like, every time I see a guy playing with it, I think
like
of that.
You mean like your six-year-old kid?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I need the bridge, Daddy. Of course you do.
Yeah, of course you do, yeah. But I've seen some guys at the pub who just roll out that bridge right away, and you know he can reach that shot, but it's the steadiness that helps him out.
Well, I mean, I putt with a short putter, and I've actually, you know, I tried a long putter just to see what it was like, not out on a course, but actually on a putting green for a long time, and it really seems easier to make it's less error, less room for error for a short stroke. So it's definitely in my mind, I think there's an advantage when you anchor the stroke as opposed to having it free, you know.
Jeremy Taggart is the drummer for Our Lady Peace. Do you guys have any shows coming up? You doing a New Year's show?
No, we're actually writing right now, and we're going to hopefully get into the studio and pop a record out soon and be back at it.
Oh, yeah.
2013. Amazing. Good stuff. Got to fill that void with all the all those NHL rinks sitting empty.
I know. Absolutely.
Jer, be in touch. We appreciate the time, and we'll speak soon.
Thanks, fellas. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot. You're listening to the Montreal Expos postgame show on the Team 990. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show, where if you were listening a little earlier, you'll know that we promised you some Lincoln.
From whence shall we expect the approach of danger? Shall some transatlantic giant step the earth and crush us at a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe and Asia could not by force take a drink from the Ohio River or set a track on the Blue Ridge. A thousand years. If destruction be our lot, we ourselves must be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we will live forever or die by suicide.
Some Lincoln and I delivered. That is Titus Andronicus, A More Perfect Union. If you were one of the 125 people that I saw at their show last week at Il Mattore, I think we were all a part of something special there. A buddy of mine calls this post-punk Springsteen. I'll call them the second best band from New Jersey. It is the Kaufman Show. You can follow me on Twitter, surprisingly, at the Kaufman Show. I know, novel, brilliant, great. Jay is much more original than me. He is at Jay Pub Radio. Three words. When you put them together, they just sound so sweet.
They do. Jay Pub Radio.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Roy in LaSalle. Good evening, Roy.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Hi, Roy.
Guys, I want to get your take on this. It's just driving me mad. What you have there with Los Angeles going out and paying, three players from Florida for, I don't know, it was $120 million. Then they go out and get a pitcher for, 5 years, excuse me, and they pay about $147 million. Then you look at what's going on in hockey right now, and it's like the owners are shooting themselves in the foot. I can see this just going. It's like a wheel going round and round and round. I mean, the owners have themselves to blame for all this, and it just makes me so ill to see a team do this right about now with the situation in hockey. And when I hear baseball paying out this kind of money.
Yeah, but baseball's fine, Roy. Baseball is healthy right now. The L.A. Dodgers can afford to do that. They have, just like it was Jeremy in the last interview that was talking about it, with the contract deal for the Dodgers, basically covers their payroll.
Right.
Baseball is fine. You know what? I mean, if you're a fan of the Florida Marlins, I can understand how you're upset.
And that's wherein lies the problem, is that because all things considered, it's not an even playing field right now, depending on what market you're in. But nobody cares about that because the owners are making money. The players are making money. Everybody's happy, except for the fans in the smaller markets.
Well, but there's
who,
no such thing
who cares
as a small,
about them, right?
There's no such thing as a small market. And thank you for the call, Roy. There's no such thing as a small market. Toronto Blue Jays were a small market baseball team until their owners decided to spend some money.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like conventional wisdom, that the Toronto Blue Jays were a small market baseball team. I'm sorry, they're the fourth largest market.
Yeah, but you're looking at revenue and exposure.
Largest market in North America, Jay.
Who?
The Blue Jays.
Right, and they're finally starting to act like it. There's a difference between whether you're a small market and whether you act like it. Tell that to the Kansas City Royals. Tell it to them. Say, you know, I mean, it's like, what can the Kansas City Royals possibly do? They're not owned by a company like Rogers and AT&T or whatever.
No, you do what the Tampa Bay Rays do, Jay.
Okay.
You have to act like you're 50 steps ahead, or you're screwed. I know.
Isn't that terrible? And how many World Series have they won?
You know what? You can't measure it in that.
Because why not? Success.
You measure it in playoff appearances. You measure it in being able to compete with the
I
big
will
boys.
Never measure it in playoff appearances because...
Really?
No.
Really? You wouldn't, in retrospect, go back and wish that the Expos had a few more playoff
appearances? Doesn't help them out, though. Yeah, well, of course, if they had a few more playoff... they're not spending the money. They seem to still be kicking out players. I mean, they just got rid of two of their horses in the pitching staff. They're not making any money.
No, one of those... Okay, hold on.
They have a crappy stadium
Wade Davis, nobody goes to.
Wade
Davis was not a horse. James Shields was a very good pitcher for them. But any time that you have the opportunity to move someone like James Shields and get a guy like Myers in return, unquestionable, you pull that trigger.
Right.
John Kakalakis is here. Good evening, John.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
Very good. Yourselves?
Good. What's going on?
Not much. Did my job in the studio, and now we're talking baseball, so I'd like to say a few things.
Jump in the fray, my friend.
Uh-oh.
Well, first of all, when it comes to the Dodgers and the TV contract and all that, it's also the culture of MLB. I compare it a lot to English Premier League or soccer. You'll always have your main teams that are making the big bucks, and that's who MLB wants to see in the playoffs too. They rather have the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Phillies, and the same way like English Premier League, they want to see Man U always on top of that list. And at the end of the day, I also think with revenue sharing now, you have teams like Kansas City and Pittsburgh, they're going to end up making their share of money at the end of the season.
That's right, without success, and who gets it? The fan. The fan. The fan doesn't see any kind of success. The guys and the owners are up in the box still making their money, even though they have a crappy team on the field. And the fan knows that he'll never, and if he does get a World Series, every time the Oakland A's make it into the playoffs, or the Tampa Bay Rays, it's a story. It's a story. It's like, isn't it amazing how these guys, because they have exceptional farm systems and great scouts, get into the playoffs? It becomes a story. Why is it a story?
Because, wow, oh my God, sometimes brains beats money.
Still doesn't.
Wow.
Still doesn't,
big
though.
Shocker.
Still doesn't, though. They manage to get in the playoffs, and then it all falls apart.
It doesn't
because
all
the other
fall
teams,
apart,
the other teams are just too powerful.
That's not
They're true. Too powerful in the end.
Disagree. I completely disagree.
Well, I haven't seen one win one yet, you know?
Well,
it's not like the NFL.
If you keep banging into that microphone.
Yeah, well, you're pissing me off.
No, man, I'm sorry, but the regular season is this wonderful test of endurance and strength. And then you get into the playoffs, and it's a complete crapshoot. Complete crapshoot. You see that by the wild card team winning it 9 times out of the last 10. Obviously not, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but the wild card team is still a successful franchise. You know, I mean, it's not 16 teams entering the playoffs. Now there's more. Granted, so you are going to give a shot to one of, you know, I mean, you've got more guys getting in there. Of course, it's a one-game playoff, which doesn't make any sense to me, but that's a whole different story. But
well, why? It's the same crapshoot as the MLB playoffs is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have that same. And if you talk to any of the old school baseball people that we've grown up listening to and admire, they think this is a big travesty, that it should go back to the days of the NL pennant and the AL pennant, or at least, you know, two divisions they meet go to the World Series. That winner goes to the World Series.
It doesn't work with the present economic situation.
Well, obviously not, because there's money to be made.
There's money to be made, and if you have it in that kind of, if it goes back to that kind of setup again, well, then you're definitely going to see the teams that have the more money have more money and who are paying their players more have more success, especially in that kind of occasion. If one can squeak through, if the Royals or the Tampa Bay or Oakland can squeak through and somehow pull off a couple of wins in the playoffs, well, then the system works. But if you go back to a two-team system where it's 1-1, you'll never see that. You'll
it's never
ever
gonna
see
happen.
That.
No, you don't. And in fact, you don't.
And that's what's wrong with the game.
You don't go backwards. right?
Right.
You only go forward.
But that's what's wrong with the game.
I'll give you another good example. Max Harris, Max the Guru on Twitter,
right,
talks a lot about the fact that before we know it, the DH will be in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's money to be made.
Right.
It'd be weird for the union to not push that.
Right.
If there could be an extra guy on each team making $4 million.
Sure.
I go back right now in my head to our conversation from earlier with Matthew Schneider, where I ended it by talking about how I was a 12-year-old kid watching him win the Stanley Cup and how there are 12-year-olds now being robbed of that. The sooner that we can all realize that this is all one big business and not the distraction that they try and pretend it to be, the better off we all are. And yeah, I was the 12-year-old kid watching the hockey, and man, that was just the greatest springtime ever. But I was also 14 when 94 rolled around. So I feel like I learned young. And it changed my view of sports. Which isn't to say I haven't had my heart broken by sports a thousand times since. But I wonder how many kids they're going to lose. Because there are a lot of kids who feel the way about the Habs, and I don't know how they do after watching them play last year, but who feel that way about the Habs that I did as a 13, 14-year-old in that summer of 94. It's going to take a lot of work to get those people back. And in the meantime, watch the record ratings in the middle of the night for the World Juniors this year. And again, it goes back to it for me, Jay. It's all about, it's so much more fulfilling. I know we've had our discussions about nationalism and nationalistic pride on the show. But for me, it's really easy to wrap myself in that maple leaf and cheer on Canada and something. And a great example of that is the World Baseball Classic that's coming up. And I am so excited.
Right.
And then today, the WBC, in conjunction with Major League Baseball, announces that there's going to be a fan cave for the World Baseball Classic.
You're going in.
We all know that.
Are you going to make an announcement right now, Dave Kaufman?
Yeah, the announcement is I'm going to apply.
That's it. Good.
And
You have thrown in your candidacy.
I am wearing the hat.
You've thrown
again.
In the hat.
That's right.
Yeah.
I expect all of your help. Not just the three of you in studio with me right now, but everybody listening as well. I've got to come up with some sort of a pitch. So I will take ideas on my Twitter page at The Kaufman Show, as well as on The Kaufman Show Facebook page. But man, how much fun would this be to go and cheer on Canada from the famed Fan Cave on Broadway and 4th in Lower Manhattan?
See, in the Baseball Classic, it's more appealing for me to cheer for Canada in that case because they're an underdog.
Right.
They're not the World Juniors. I'm going to watch it, and I will watch it. It's at perfect time. It's right when I get home from work. I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to enjoy it for the hockey because, you know, I love the way these kids play. But as for cheering for Canada in the World Juniors, I really don't care. I couldn't care less. But in baseball, I'll be more prone to cheering for Canada because they are a bit of an underdog, and it'll be a lot of fun.
I haven't had as much joy as a baseball fan as I had watching Canada in the 2009 World Baseball Classic.
Yeah.
It was the best. To go down to Toronto and to cheer. It was the first time that I was able to cheer for a team.
Yeah.
Actually, my team.
Your team.
My team, man. That's something that had been gone for so long. And I want that feeling again. I can't wait for this World Baseball Classic.
I hope you deserve to be in the man cave. Did I call? I was going to say the man cave. The fan
you
cave.
You did say the man cave.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about my house.
Well, it was won by a woman this year, right?
Yeah,
we had MLB fan cave winner Ashley Chavez on the show. Well, she's a very knowledgeable baseball fan.
I'm sure she is.
Her team also happened to win the World Series this year.
Yeah. The stars aligned.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
good for her.
Isn't that what? Kismet?
Kismet?
Isn't that what that is?
I don't know.
All right. It's the chef in Montebello. We'll take him instead. Hello, sir.
Dave, the fan cave man. That would be so cool.
Yeah, let's. I'm going to go for it, man.
Honestly,
Kismet, by the way.
I could
Sanskrit,
not...
Urdu, or Hindi, meaning fate or destiny.
There you go.
Boom.
Wow.
Mic drop. What's going on, Jeff?
I learn so much from the show every week.
Thank you.
It is so great. And Jeremy Taggart is just, he's the greatest.
In retrospect, he should have been the first interview of the night. Jeremy was amazing.
I honestly think you should have him on for one complete show. I mean,
I'd love to, man. I would love to have. I'm sure that last time he was in town, he was going to join us on the show, but he wasn't feeling well. And Jay and I watched him. Remember this?
Suffer.
Oh.
Through the set, but made it.
Oh my God, they
made
were so good. I've never seen somebody so sick and drum so well.
He'd finish a song, and if it was an acoustic, you know, song that they were doing, he'd walk right off stage, and they probably had a bucket ready for him backstage.
A true team player.
That's right.
That's the way he comes across. I mean, everything he talks about, or was the quarry thing you were talking about earlier?
Because yeah.
I follow him on Twitter, and like I basically tweeted earlier this evening, I don't know of an individual who tweets more than he does.
Huh.
He is constantly on my page. I said, Jared, and fortunately for myself, I got a chance to meet him at the Gary Carter evening we had at Hurley's.
That's right.
And he looks completely different from everything you actually see or hear from him on Twitter. He looks just so laid back and looks like a guy who has absolutely nothing to contribute to any conversation whatsoever. But to sit back and to listen to him, and he's just... He's great. Seriously, what a great invite on your show.
Jeremy is one of our favorites by far. And, of course, you know, the fact that he came in and took part in our Gary Carter night, just, I mean, he's a friend for life now.
And with Matthew Snyder earlier this evening,
it
was funny the way he was coming across. Everything he was saying was the exact same thing that your entry song says every night. Is they have deadlines to meet, and they have not gotten to that deadline yet.
Yeah, but he didn't mention the effing Europeans, thankfully.
No, but I do, and I scream it out every time.
You might be screaming that out during the World Juniors come next week.
No, that's going to be great, though. Listen, I'll have a reason to stay up later than I actually am right now. I guess you guys should have your show get on from 1 to 5 maybe on the Monday night. And we can play into hockey.
I'm not sure what's going to happen. To be honest with you, I think we're probably going to take a couple of weeks off over the holidays. And
out of here.
Because the show falls on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, so
yeah.
I feel like it would be unfair to ask Mr. Farrar to work on Christmas Eve, and I feel like it would be unrealistic to ask him to work on New Year's Eve.
It would be, and it'd be we're greedy. What do you want?
We're going to talk to the powers that be, and hopefully Jay and I can put together a best of show,
and
some of our favorite interviews from the past year.
I'm just wondering if I didn't misunderstand. You guys are thinking of changing up the songs on the entry and the way out?
Not at all. No, we were just kidding around.
Okay.
Don't worry, Joel Plaskett's. For as long as this show is on this station in this city, that will be our song that we close the show with.
And that would be a great song to get into this fan cave with all your... Oh, this is going to be great. You're going to have so many people following you, Dave. It's going to be such a blast. And you could not be a better representative for Canada and for the Canadian team.
Well, let's hope we can get some support. And as soon as I get that pitch up and running, we'll start a Facebook page and we'll get we'll see what kind of traction we can get.
Okay, no more sucking up, guys. Have a nice evening.
Thank you, Chef. We appreciate it.
Take care.
That is Andrew in Montebello. And, I got to say, I'm a little excited. I saw this today, and, my baseball spidey sense started tingling, man.
Your baseball spidey sense.
That's right.
That's cool.
I don't know how else to put it.
No, I guess. I get it. I understand.
I want to cheer Canada on. I want to go to the World Baseball Classic. I'm so bummed that it's
What's
not
up for
Toronto.
Grabs in this thing?
I don't know.
What do you win?
Because
that's the important part.
I think...
Forget cheering for Canada. What do you get?
I'll be honest with you, Jay. It doesn't say.
No?
No.
Oh.
I mean, you get to live in New York City for the 3 weeks of the tournament.
Yeah, but you got to stay inside, right?
But yeah, you have to watch every game.
Okay.
And they're going to be on at crazy hours, right? Because the tournament's all over the world in the
right.
first round.
Yeah.
So they'll be...
Well, then you're, that's right up your alley, isn't it?
Yeah.
Keeping crazy hours.
And watching baseball.
You're as bad as I am, yeah.
And watching baseball. We'll keep all of you listeners up to date on it as we go through. And, we'll see what happens. But this could be really cool. In the meantime, I think it's time for a celebration. It's time for some fireworks. Tonight was the Japandroids concert in Montreal.
The who?
Japandroids.
That's a great name.
Fantastic group from Vancouver.
What was the other group's name?
I don't know.
The one you were playing before.
Titus Andronicus.
Beautiful.
Tramps Like Us, Baby, We Were Born to Die. If you were at the Japan Droid show tonight, I'm jealous. This show got a lot of this song got a lot of rotation on our show this summer. The Knights of Wine and Roses, Japan Droids. Good Canadian boys. Love that anthemic rock on the Kaufman Show. We'll be back to wrap it up right after this. Wilco. I will pay you more than money. Do love this album.
Ingrid Bergman. Not by pennies, dimes, nor quarters, but with happy sons and daughters, and they'll sing around Stromboli. Ingrid Bergman. This old mountain, it's been waiting all its life for you to work it. For your hand to touch its hard rock, Ingrid Bergman.
You know, hype is a funny thing, Mr. Farrar. We were on tonight after a Monday Night Football game that everybody said was going to be the great battle of
Monday Night Football of the 21st century. Yeah.
Yes, the Super Bowl before the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl in December.
Right.
When's the last time that something lived up to its hype like that? What, Saturday night's fight?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the first thing that popped in my head, only because it was recent. But before that, I couldn't tell you exactly what and how many times. More often than not, it does not live up to the hype.
It really doesn't.
That fight on Saturday, wow. I mean, it was only six rounds, but... It was something to see, my friend.
What's the next sporting event that you have in your head as hyped up as, like, you're psyched for?
Wow, there's not much going on,
I
is
know,
there?
I know, eh? It's a messed up time.
The next sporting event.
Because, like, we can, you know, no matter how bad the Habs and the Leafs are, you get excited for Habs Leafs on a Saturday night.
For me personally, it's not really that exciting, but it seems to be a lot of hype surrounding this World Juniors that we mentioned. After that.
Really? Really?
Well, I mean, it's all they got, right? Man, people want to see how Galchenyuk does. They want to see, you know, they want to see Huberdeau and all these guys on Team Canada and Nugent Hopkins and...
No.
Very exciting stuff for Canadian people.
Not my friend.
Not for me either.
No.
Like I said, but it seems to be getting a lot of hype.
I think the most enjoyment I've taken out of the World Juniors in the last couple of years was... What year was it? I guess it would have been just at the start of 2011.
Right.
When it was Russia-Canada.
Yes.
And they beat us.
Yes.
And there was just this... Russia had an incredible comeback in the third period, right?
Yes, that's right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Canada was up, I think, 3 goals, maybe 4.
Yes, I was actually watching that game, yeah.
So great. The only time I enjoy junior hockey is when... And it's when the commies win, because...
The commies!
Like you said, Jay, it's hard to... Canada's always the favorite, and there's not... It's not that exciting to watch the favorite.
Right.
I'm not a New York Yankees fan.
And I'm not patriotic, so I don't care. Oh. Super Bowl, maybe Super Bowl. How about Super Bowl? Early February.
We don't know who's playing. It doesn't count.
It doesn't count. Okay.
I don't think so.
But we know it's going to happen.
I'm excited.
Unless December 21st.
Canada, Italy. Well, I think it's March 2nd.
The rematch. The rematch after the disappointing loss
from
to Italy
Arizona
in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine I'm one of 6 people that's really excited for that rematch. God help me.
5 of them in Canada, 1 in Italy.
Max is in San Fran.
He's in San
Fran. To be
fair. He's excited about that.
I think Brett Laurie, probably, he has a vested interest. He was on the roster last time.
Hey, listen, it's good baseball. It's good baseball.
I look forward to good baseball. I look forward to baseball where I can really cheer for the team. And again,
right.
Like, that's such a huge thing. And it was so big. I don't know how many other Expos fans felt that way in 2009 when we got the opportunity to cheer for another team. But, man, it felt good. It felt like it did back in the day cheering for the Expos. It had
right.
that similar. So, yeah, I can wrap myself in that flag.
Okay. To each his own.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, you've done your flag thing. You went to Woodstock.
I went to Woodstock,
You saw Our Lady Peace and the Hip at Woodstock.
I did see that. I don't know what it has to do with the flag, but it's more...
I've never seen more Canadian flags in my life than at that concert.
Yeah, I saw... Yeah, but I didn't have one. It was nice to see. Most of them weren't from where I was from, and I really had as much of a connection of with
well, yeah,
them
because
than a guy
us,
from Memphis.
Most of us Quebecers don't have Canadian flags.
No,
so.
That's right. All the better.
This has been a fun one tonight. I want to thank our guests. We can do that? We're ready to go home?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, right?
I'm tired.
Don't worry, we'll be back next week.
I love doing this. Are we back next week?
We are back next week.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. The day after Jay Farrar's birthday party. I'm sure we'll be in fine fighting form, ladies
boy,
and gentlemen.
Oh, boy. You know what? I'll just stay up. I'll just stay up.
Please don't do that.
Okay.
Please. I want to thank our 3 guests tonight, Mr. Jonah Carey, Mr. Matthew Schneider, and Mr. Jeremy Taggart. It was really fun.
Yeah, good guess. Good insight. Nice takes.
Bye.
Bye, Dave. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw you back in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. It's the reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. You hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun.
face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviera de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman. We'll be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?